Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston. And you know, I cannot think of a better way to grab your attention than playing another pleasing and soothing soundbite from MAGA Michigan Republican Congresswoman Lisa McClain, who represents the Thumb region of the state. Now, McClain's been part of that daily MAGA Republican House majority lie machine, echoing one lie after another or some ridiculous claim after another in the MAGA House's hopes of pinning the government's shutdown, their government shutdown, on the Democratic minority. And I will say that again, Democratic Party minority, since it doesn't wield any power within our federal government, since dear leaders in the White House and MAGA Republicans run both the U.S. House and Senate. But here is Lisa McClain trying and lying her darnest to say it's Democrats who are to blame because of a rocky Sesame Street.
While Republicans are working at home, Democrats are fighting for weird programs, like halfway across the world, right? Think about it. Just think about it for a minute. They're sacrificing Head Start right down your street to produce Iraq Sesame Street. So they'd rather spend money on Iraqi Sesame Street than fund your Head Start programs. But President Trump is, you know, the bad guy for putting America first. Scratch your head on that one.
Again, imagine being stuck in an office having to listen to that nutball on a daily basis. Lisa McClain is trying to conflate and confuse the voters by saying, hey, everyone, yeah, it's true. Dear Leader Trump and MAGA Republicans refused to budge on the draconian Medicaid cuts from our MAGA murder budget last summer. Oh, yeah, it's true. We refused to budge on helping provide Affordable Care Act subsidies to ensure that millions of Americans won't get priced out from rising private insurance companies' premiums. And yeah, it's true that we're high-fiving with the Trump regime's $40 billion bailout of a failed MAGA country like Argentina, while America's soybean farmers get screwed while China is now buying Argentinian soybeans. But Lisa McClain wants you to look at the squirrel, you know, like Doug the dog did in the movie Up, you know, squirrel, and say, hey, look over there. Look how Democrats want to pay $20 million for Iraqi Sesame Street. Of course, this was a tired line used by MAGA influencers and propaganda sites such as Fox News when Elon Musk and Big Balls and their crew were gutting the funding for U.S. aid programs. And one line that MAGA used to justify those cuts was Iraqi Sesame Street. But as Snopes said in a story on that funding, MAGA, like Lisa McClain is doing, is conflating the issue. And, you know, what a shock. I mean, it's not completely true, whatever Lisa McClain's saying. Oh, wow. But wait, let's just suppose, okay, let's suppose what Lisa McClain was saying is 100% on the money true. Hey, Lisa, we obliterated Iraq about 20 years ago over a lie. There were no weapons of mass destruction. There was never a mission accomplished. There was no yellow cake used for bomb materials, not for food. It was one of the greatest military and foreign policy blunders and tragedies of the last 100 years. Perhaps we, Lisa, you know, the United States of America, could ante up a measly $20 million to provide some early childhood development programs in a country we freaking destroyed with shock and awe and surges and more. And I will provide a link to that Snopes article so you can read more into Lisa's lie on Iraqi Sesame Street funding. But Lisa McClain is trying to say, all right, that any kind of USA funding isn't America First funding. Well, Lisa, try telling that to the farmers who helped sell their crops through that program, or Michigan State University researchers who helped poorer countries through education and development. You know, it's called soft diplomacy because it put the United States in a good light across the world. That's kind of an American First policy, is it not, Lisa? And good job screwing the farmers and also hundreds of jobs at various universities that were part of the USAID program. Not that you care about working class Michiganders, though, but what's more laughable and also makes me seethe is how Lisa McClain argued that Democrats are sacrificing Head Start. MAGA Republicans are now suddenly fighting to save Head Start? Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a minute. I thought MAGA Republicans wanted to end Head Start. I mean, hell, Project 2025 even states it's one of its primary goals in education is to gut Head Start programs. But the regime tried to close Head Start programs across the country. But then, if you recall, last spring and some early summer, they had to rescind on that call after hearing an outcry of anger from parents and educators from across the nation. But that still hasn't meant that everything rocks, as we learned a few months ago, how a longtime nonprofit in Detroit announced that it didn't receive federal dollars to run a Home Start program, leaving some 300 kids in Detroit and their families with nowhere to go. Lisa McClain, sounding like that she suddenly cares about Head Start, is such a joke. But she is correct, and that Head Start programs will begin to suffer the longer her MAGA Republican shutdown continues. And they're continuing it because they refuse to help working class Americans receive decent Medicaid coverage, and they refuse to help working class Americans receive subsidies for rising insurance premiums. This is their shutdown. Now, I would like to just take this brief moment, though, to switch the lens back here in Michigan when it comes to early childhood education. Because as bad as the MAGA Congress and Dear Leader have been for public education, the latest state budget, the bipartisan budget that's, you know, being celebrated in Lansing or by the Lansing intelligentsia, yeah, that budget is gutting early education development programs. The Detroit Free Press's Becky San Martin reported last week that the much celebrated budget, that bipartisan budget, eliminates millions of dollars directed towards parents to help their kids get early childhood services. Here's part of the story by Becky San Martin. I read it here. Michigan's state budget unexpectedly eliminated $19.4 million in funding for a program that coordinates early childhood services in each county across the state, shocking school leaders, early childhood experts, and parents. Great Start Collaborative works in a wide variety of ways, for example, to get families access to child care and preschool, early childhood literacy programming, developmental screenings, home visits for new parents, family play groups, and parent educational events. The program has existed in Michigan for nearly 20 years with the goal of making sure families and their children, especially those between birth and 5 years old, are able to access the services they need to be healthy and developmentally ready to succeed in school. Everybody is thrown, said Annette Sabasinski, executive director at the Child Care Network, a nonprofit helping connect families to child care across Southeast Michigan. It happened so suddenly and after the fiscal year. Now, intermediate school districts are scrambling to figure out what this means. And do we have a way to sustain this work now that state funding is gone? What the actual... According to that story, over 285,000 Michigan kids were served through that Great Start Collaborative. And go figure, Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, Democratic Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks, and man-baby MAGA State House Speaker Matt Hall all declined to comment on the story. But this was such a great bipartisan collaborative effort. Everybody should be celebrating this. This is disgusting, everyone. Disgusting. It's a complete power play in Lansing, just as in Washington, D.C., where the connected corporate lobbyists win by landing massive government welfare in the hundreds of millions while working class families and their kids continue to struggle to get by on a daily basis. And it's enraging to me that so many smart and serious so-called moderate people can't seem to get it through their thick heads that in order to attract people and brain power here to the state, investing in our state's education is the most surefire way to make that a reality. I mean, what is going on? And that's why I implore you to go back and listen to my interview with Jess Newman from the Invest in My Kids ballot initiative, which will tax the 1% in the state to help raise $1 billion per year to fund public schools. Yes, we're looking at Betsy DeVos, DTE and Consumers Energy CEOs, or for-profit charter school pusher and billionaire J.C. Huizenga, who's also helping bankroll corporatist and MAGA enabler Mike Duggan's independent campaign to become Michigan's next governor. Yeah, the Detroit mayor touted himself as being a supposed Democrat, but he was always, always a corporatist first and foremost. And now he's running and portraying himself as a moderate and also an anti-party kind of a guy, somebody that you can trust. But he's not running on anything for the people. He's running to represent corporate interest in Michigan. And it's why Mike Duggan is embracing the MAGA money machine, the corporate authoritarians, the oligarchy. I mean, Duggan, by the way, earned over $2 million per year when he was the CEO of Detroit Medical Center before becoming the mayor of Detroit. So this Invest in My Kids ballot initiative would ensure that, yes, Mike Duggan would have to pay his fair share to help Michigan's public schools, which were decimated by a lack of funding years ago and has never regained its footing. We need a level playing field, everyone, and that's all the working class is asking and honestly is demanding. MAGA Michigan Congresswoman Lisa McClain and that creepy white Christian nationalist and oligarchy enabler Mike Johnson are also, you know, talking about how they are suddenly worried about how the shutdown will hurt those on food and nutrition assistance programs. Are you kidding me? I mean, that's freaking rich coming from the guys who slashed the program by nearly $300 million and slapped draconian work requirements on the working class. I mean, which is funny because considering how damn awful the Biden economy supposedly was, and hey, it wasn't perfect by any means, I will say it. It still confounds me how MAGA Republicans can say that, but then they succeeded in further punishing their working class voters with work requirements so their families could eat, you know, semi-decent food and, you know, get a pop once in a while. Oh, that's right. They don't want working class people drinking pop either. Only the fine elites get to do that kind of stuff. What a luxury. Again, from the so-called Freedom Party. Remember, proud to be an American party? It's also rich coming from these same people who haven't worked now in almost a month, and yet they are placing work requirements on those who want to receive basic health care and some food. I mean, it's impossible for Lisa McClain and her fellow Republican congressional colleagues from Michigan like Tom Barrett, Bill Huizenga, Jack Bergman, Tim Walberg, John James, who's running for governor, and my human pylon of a congressman, John Molnar. It's impossible for them to act like they have this newfound care for working class Michiganders after they gutted food programs and gutted Medicaid while closing rural hospitals. And they did it just so Elon Musk, Tim Apple, as you know, Trump calls them, or tech bros like Peter Thiel and Meta's Mark Zuckerberg and Amazon's Jeff Bezos and the Trump family could all receive more money in massive tax cuts for their crowd. It's always about enriching their crowd. In order for fascism to exist, everyone, they need corporate authoritarians to go along with them. And that's exactly what we're seeing. And, you know, I saw this clip this week, and I had to play it for you because once in a great while, the truth slips out from the regime, and I was fascinated by this clip. Trump regime MAGA Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins was on CNBC this week, not known, you know, for being confused with The Nation magazine. And the host, I believe his name is Joe Kernan, asked Rollins why beef prices continue to surge in this country. And I want you to listen to Brooke Rollins' answer. OK, listen.
What happened to beef prices? How do we bring them down?
We have had a massive run on beef over the last decade. We've had almost 17% of our producers close, which is about our ranchers, which is about 150,000 ranchers have now stopped ranching. It's a whole other show. We need to describe that. But basically, there's been a massive consolidation, which has not been good for our ranching industry. We have, you know, offshored a lot of that to some companies in Brazil and some other internationally. China owns some other companies. There's a real, really important realignment that has to happen for us to begin to onshore. When we talk about onshoring and reshoring for manufacturing, we need to onshore and reshore for our beef producers, for our ranchers. So the prices are high. The president is very focused on fulfilling his promise of bringing grocery prices down.
Okay, first, it's astounding, just astounding that we're going to purchase beef from Argentina, the very country the Trump regime just paid $40 billion in bailout money. I can't believe we're doing that. But Brooke Rollins said something also that was very interesting in that second part where she said that beef consolidation is partially to blame for higher beef prices as well. Well, hey, I will actually give her credit on that part, even though I'm not certain she wanted it to come out that way. The American Prospect a couple of years ago wrote about the Big Four in the meatpacking industry to help explain why beef prices are rising. They said the Big Four, Tyson, JBS, Cargill, and National Beef, purchase and process 85% of beef in the United States. Four companies, 4, purchase and process 85% of beef in this country. Yeah, that seems like a problem to me too. You're not the only one. And it's hurting ranchers across the country. I mean, getting beef from Argentina isn't going to lower beef prices in America. And I like what the National Farmers Union president, his name is Rob LaRue, said this week regarding the Trump regime's insanity on buying Argentinian beef. This is what he said. Lowering beef prices for consumers starts with restoring fairness in the marketplace, not by importing beef from Argentina and undercutting Americans' ranchers. Years of drought, depressed cattle prices, and unchecked corporate consolidation have already pushed many family farmers and ranchers to the brink, all while consumers pay more at the grocery store. And the National Farmers Union president, Rob LaRue, continued here, saying, in times of extreme uncertainty in the farm economy, we should be doubling down on our efforts to support family farmers and ranchers here at home. The answer isn't foreign beef. It's rebuilding herds to meet domestic demand, restoring competition in meat packing, enacting mandatory country of origin labeling so consumers, all of us, you know, would know where our beef is coming from, and creating a fair marketplace that works for both farmers and consumers. All right, here. Now, restoring competition in the meatpacking industry. Yeah, you see, I believe that is called capitalism. And sometimes it takes government to restore competition in the marketplace. Sometimes it might take democratic socialism to help get that passed. But you think that those big four meatpacking industries want someone other than Dear Leader and his regime calling the shots? Yeah, no, they don't want anyone else. They paid for him. They got him. They don't want anyone else. Not one bit. They're all in this together. And you're seeing this massive grift as, again, the regime bailed out a failed MAGA country like Argentina. And now here we are buying beef from Argentina. And meanwhile, Argentina is giving its soybeans to China. China used to purchase our soybeans, but not anymore, thanks to Dear Leader's tariffs. The working class continues to just get clobbered. And as predicted by many, including yours truly, the Trump regime isn't fixing or isn't about fixing the problem. It's about enriching its own friends with their elite corporate circle. All right. It's all about their own elite circle. It's why I believe Dear Leader's demolition of the East Wing of the White House is a perfect illustration and metaphor of what's happening to our country. Once again, Congress didn't authorize funding or receive any input on this whole construction or deconstruction. MAGA Republicans who control Congress, they don't care. They don't care that Dear Leader's tearing down an entire wing of the White House. Our house, as I was once told, all because Dear Leader wants a Mar-a-Lago-style ballroom to seat nearly 1,000 people where he can just hold parties for his corporate billionaire and other big-name celebrity buddies. Oh, wait. You think the guy with the Trump flag in front of his house in Saginaw Township will get in there? Think again. Now, this project will cost supposedly around $290 million. I don't know. Who knows how much this is going to cost? I mean, Dear Leader also declared that no part of the White House would get demolished. But again, he said, psych! And the dutiful corporate press just laughed in glee. Ha ha ha! That says Trump being Trump. Isn't he just great? Now, he's also said the cost would be paid by himself, but that's not entirely true. The BBC reports a dinner for potential donors held at the White House on October 15th included senior executives from prominent U.S. companies, including Blackstone, OpenAI, Microsoft, Coinbase, Palantir, Lockheed Martin, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google. Also present was Woody Johnson, the owner of the New York Jets NFL football team, and Sherry and Edward Glazer, who together with their siblings own both the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Manchester United. Hey, congrats on your 0-7 Jets team there, Woody Johnson, which just goes to show that these supposed smart billionaires aren't so smart. Anyway, as I was saying, in order for fascism to form and gain in strength, it needs the help of the corporate donor authoritarian class. I mean, there's OpenAI, Palantir, Microsoft, Amazon, and Google all willing to pay the shilling to help their Dear Leader build his little ballroom. And they're doing it because those tech corporations are also receiving billions of dollars in federal money, not to mention massive tax cuts for the 1%, their crowd. And they're also receiving billions in corporate welfare from across the nation to help build job and energy-sucking data centers in several states. Michigan's legislature joined together in such an effort to ensure that such data centers could be built here. I mean, it's unconscionable. It is happening. However, some communities, some in blue areas, some in red areas, are pushing back against these data centers from being built in their communities. And they're pushing back because we, the working class, are not part of the Trump regimes and the corporate authoritarian plans to gain more power and wealth. And again, I still don't know where some Michigan Democrats' heads were when they decided to okay such projects like that. Governor Whitmer, I'm looking at you too. The corporate authoritarian donor class is fine with fascism just as long as they come out ahead. We should not be rewarding that. And it sickens me that in Michigan, we've got politicians on both sides of the aisle who are rewarding these same companies with massive tax breaks and corporate welfare to sell out our working class by leading to job losses and skyrocketing energy bills with these data centers. What is going on? And Michiganders know that they're being held down by corporate and government corruption. They're seeing it each and every day, and it is corruption. A recent Detroit Regional Chamber poll revealed that there's an even split right now amongst Michiganders who say the economy is doing better or worse, and it seems like it's going along party lines. However, digging deeper into these numbers gives us a little bit more insight. This is from MLive's Dylan Getz. Of the nearly 43% of voters who think that the state's economy is not going in the right direction, voters cite inflation, a lack of good jobs, and low wages as reasons for their vote, according to the release. Rising costs are impacting spending decisions, too, according to the results of the poll. 68% of voters say they are paying more for utilities, with more than half saying they are paying more for car and home insurance. And check this out, every demographic group, and I'll repeat that again, every demographic group reported to be spending more on groceries by a minimum of 63.4%. More than half of the voters are opposed to increased tariffs, while 40% of them are in favor. Michigan voters believe tariffs on Canada will be bad for the state's economy, with 57% of them in opposition, while just 19% are in favor. And one more note, 61% of voters think artificial intelligence will mean fewer jobs in Michigan. This is why Democrats in D.C. must hold the line. And they can't just talk like Democrats and gobbledygook on the shutdown, and they can't make more demands. Stick to reviving Medicaid cuts and stick to ACA subsidies. That is resonating. It is winning. It is putting Republicans on the defensive. Don't let up. And don't let Chuck Schumer or Hakeem Jeffries talk. The entire working class feels like it has zero power. And what I found enlightening from that Detroit Regional Chamber poll is that once the questions became more specific, like on tariffs, on AI, on grocery prices, car insurance, the issue of affordability was one common thread. And that's what the government shutdown is all about, too. We're talking about affordability issues. And some wonder why Zoran Mamdani appears to be New York City's next mayor. It's really not that hard to figure out. I found this story from NPR's Elena Moore on All Things Considered interesting because when it came to how millennials and Gen Z Americans are feeling about the state of their financial well-being, the story said this: 7 in 10 Gen Zers say jobs are difficult to find right now, along with nearly 6 in 10 millennials, according to a Marist poll from April. An analysis from the Pew Research Center last year also found that both generations are less likely to say the American dream is still possible compared to the generations before them. Yeah, you think? And Elena Moore tacked on this important fact: the median age of a first-time home buyer has also drastically increased, going from 28 years old in 1991 to 38 years old last year, according to the National Association of Realtors. This combination of concerns has pushed, now listen to this, has pushed some young Americans towards more left-leaning populist ideas and caused others to feel unsatisfied by today's political leaders. Corporate greed, corporate corruption, and government corruption led us down this very path, everyone. Plus, neoliberal policies, many of which have been championed by some Democrats for years, are also to blame for where we are today. I mean, neoliberalism's failures helped bring us Donald Trump. And for some to ignore that reality is a crime. But you heard the story say it right there, that economic concerns are pushing more younger Americans to adopt left-leaning, progressive, populist ideas. Because you understand, the old way ain't working. I mean, Bill Maher and corporate billionaires like Mark Cuban can clutch their pearls all they want about more and more Americans adopting populism and democratic socialism. But Bill Maher's way and the billionaire way of thinking is why Americans are left feeling in despair and why they no longer want the way things used to be done or how things are currently going. Which leads me to the No Kings protest here last weekend. I talked a little bit of my experience attending a No Kings event in the middle of the Mitten in Alma, Michigan over the weekend. I mean, okay, yes, again, I know St. Louis, Michigan is right next door and they claim to be the middle of the Mitten, but Alma is close enough. Now, Gratiot County is not one of the most progressive counties in the state. I mean, aside from a couple of blue pockets here and there in Gratiot County, it's overwhelmingly MAGA country. But on this past Saturday, over 130 residents took the time to show up, hold up signs that they made, and they took the time to wave American flags to show the people in the area how they do not abide by kings in this country. And by the way, you didn't see people waving flags for a man. They were waving American flags because for all of her ills and issues, the premise of America is more than just showing fealty to one person. Its vision is about becoming a more enlightened society, a more enlightened country. And that always remains the goal. At least I thought so. I mean, I will never understand how those claiming to stand by America, to love the flag, are also the same people who fly Trump flags as they glorify and deify the man. I mean, they show more loyalty to the man than they do the country. They love that he's using a secret police force to go across the country, rounding up brown people and making them disappear. They don't believe that kind of power and nullification of due process deserves any kind of oversight. They like having daddy in control of everything, a king. After numerous MAGA Republicans warned the public of massive potential violence last weekend, well, the day turned out to be peaceful and successful as Americans from all walks of life showed their solidarity for democracy, showed their opposition to dear leader Trump, but they also showed solidarity for the working class who are getting screwed over by MAGA Republicans and years of neoliberal economic failures. They showed solidarity for the farmers who are getting screwed over by the Trump regime's tariffs. They showed solidarity for universal health care. And it was a day where people voiced their support for working class agenda. The 5 to 8 million Americans who showed up across the country are tired of watching the Trump regime and its corporate tech titans and the oil and gas industry and the defense lobby work hand in hand to empower and enrich themselves while the working class fights for the scraps that's left on the floor. They're tired of watching billions and billions of dollars wasted on Israel's genocide of Palestinians. They're tired of watching billions go to bail out failed MAGA states like Argentina. They're just tired. They are so tired, but they are not giving up. One such person who refuses to give up is Christy Freestone, who's the chair of the Gratiot County Democratic Party. And I spoke with Ms. Freestone for just a few moments during the No Kings event in Alma, and I wanted her to explain why she wanted to help spearhead this effort, an effort, again, that helped bring 134 people together.
What made you really want to come out here today and be part of this whole effort?
We wanted our citizens in Gratiot County, it's mostly a red area, to know that Donald Trump and his administration are not helping them. They're the people that are probably hurt most, the farmers in this area, right, and people that are in jeopardy of losing their health care, all the closing. The Department of Education shutting down, not working at full force now, all of that. But mostly, it's really, I'm thinking about my parents who are no longer alive, who were World War II generation. And I remember my dad telling me that the United States will never fall to a fascist government. And I guess I'm partly here for that.
Right.
It's fighting for that, for them.
Right.
For the people that fought in all those wars that gave us the freedom we have right now, that gave Donald Trump and his cronies the freedom to be elected president.
Right.
And now we need to take it back now, which is not happening within the government. It's going to have to happen from people like us, everyday citizens, rising up to show our discontent.
And are you pleased with what you're seeing here in Alma today?
With this, I'm not sure how many people. I know we've got over 100.
Yeah.
And we've been having consistent marches. They range from 30 to 50. Mm-hmm. So this is a big march for us today. today in Gresham County. Yeah.
How do you think this will help maybe spread the message? Like you said, we're in a red area here in Michigan. Do you think this is helping make people getting people wake up to see exactly what can happen if we move way too far to the right?
Yes, and I think I've been told by some physicians in this area that they're starting now to see cuts from Medicare. They'll tell people, yes, you can get your flu shot. And then when they turn the insurance in, they say, nope, we're not covering that. And so I think as that becomes more prevalent, people that have been pro-Trump administration are going to see that they are not helping them.
Right.
And when it hits them personally, I think the farmers in this area certainly they're struggling.
Yep.
When I heard that China used to buy most of our soybeans and they're not buying any this year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of issues that I think they're going to start realizing. And inflation, certainly, the cost of groceries are not going down. That's clear. And so I think when it starts hitting them personally, they're going to start. And I think we all have the right to know that we have the right to believe in something. And when we know it's not right any longer, it's okay to change. It's okay to change your mind.
Yes, it is.
It's not a sign of weakness for you. It's a sign of great intelligence.
You know, and another thing, too, it just looks like this is a good way for the working class to really band together and show that they are one voice.
Right, right, right. And what I like about these marches, we have our office here. We have our monthly meetings every third Monday of the month.
Okay.
But we don't have a lot of young people.
Right.
But young people come out for these marches. This is important to them. And they're here with their sign, and they're standing together. I know that we're a common voice. It feels like we're a common voice today.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. And my final question, how much did George Soros pay you today? Did you get your personal check?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you once again to Christy Freestone of the Gratiot County Democrats for stepping aside to talk with me for a few moments that day. And as you heard from some of the cars beeping there in the background, there were others who couldn't be there, but who definitely approved of what those 130-plus people from Gratiot County were doing there that day. Now, you heard Ms. Freestone talk about young people there. And from some of the footage that I saw in bigger cities across the nation, I did see some younger people, no doubt. And there were a couple of young people at that Alma rally, but there weren't that many. And I was wondering why that was the case. And as I said in my Monday musing, maybe progressive political commentator Cameron Caskey, who helped organize the March for Our Lives effort, maybe he was onto something when he said that Gen Z isn't marching right now because they've learned that protesting alone isn't enough. Maybe it's because the March for Our Lives didn't lead to fewer school shootings or Black Lives Matter didn't achieve more police accountability. And I'd even go further in saying how Gen Z did protest against sending arms and money to Israel at college campuses across the state, across the country, only to have political leaders, some of them Democratic leaders, attack them and arrest them for using their First Amendment rights and for believing in America first, which is why I believe these No Kings protests were about opposing the Trump regime, but they were also about standing up for the working class, standing up for the voiceless. These protests are also against a system that allowed for Trump to gain this kind of power and to profit from this kind of power. A system filled with party insiders who obviously ended up caring more about their own power and prestige rather than caring about the working class. I mean, we cannot just be protesting to save things or just to protect a system that was failing to begin with. The system, this neoliberal system, can't make a return since it and its misguided followers brought us Donald Trump. As I mentioned in that NPR story, millennials and Gen Z Americans are not realizing the American dream right now. It's one thing to get rid of Trump, but the corporate authoritarians, everyone, they already have their favorites ready and willing to step in his place when his time is over. That's why this political movement must be about restoring fairness and rights to the entire working class. It can't just be about protecting Social Security or protecting healthcare. It's got to be about expanding and strengthening Social Security and fighting for universal healthcare. It can't be about borrowing MAGA talking points about securing the border as the regime then utilizes violence in American cities against powerless immigrants who are working hard, who are paying taxes, and who are just trying to make it in this country. These No Kings protests weren't just against Trump and what MAGA Republican stands for, which is for elite corporate donors and also for white Christian nationalism. And we wonder why they refused to release the Epstein files. These protests were more than that. They were about a working class binding together to fight for what was taken away from us. And while defeating MAGA Republicanism is indeed the most important thing to saving this country, we need strong, progressive, populist Democrats to illustrate a clear alternative, a working class alternative. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's rock and rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
Hey, please subscribe to the show wherever you are listening and give it a good 5-star review. Subscribe and like the videos that I post on Left of Lansing's YouTube page as well. I would greatly appreciate it. Next week, I'm looking forward to speaking with William Lawrence, who is the co-founder of the Sunrise Movement and coordinator of the My Rent is Too Damn High Coalition, and who's running to become the Democratic nominee for the 7th Congressional District in Michigan, a district currently being held by MAGA Republican Tom Barrett. And by the way, has Barrett held a town hall in that district yet? I doubt it. I'm kind of following in the footsteps of every other Michigan Republican congressperson. But William Lawrence will join me next week to talk about his candidacy. Time now for the Left of Lansing Last Call. Last week, I spoke with Karen O'Keefe from the Marijuana Policy Project about that so-called awesome 24% wholesale tax on recreational marijuana, which is supposedly going to help repair our local roads. Now, it's a tax that Ms. O'Keefe explained was another tax on the backs of the working class here in Michigan, and a tax that will hurt small business marijuana shops, not to mention discourage out-of-staters to visit Michigan. Supporters of the tax claim that it would raise $420 million. And again, I'm sure that number wasn't made up for just pure theater. Anyway, the marijuana tax was part of that awesome bipartisan budget bill passed a couple of weeks ago. And you know what? It was so awesome. This tax was so awesome, you'd think that somebody in Lansing would want to take credit for it in Lansing, right? I mean, this was such a great, great idea. Certainly somebody would want to raise their hand, push themselves in front of the cameras and say, hey, it was me, I did that. But according to Michigan Advance's Ben Solis, that doesn't seem to be the case. Solis reports that MAGA House Speaker Matt Hall originally tried to place the marijuana tax on the back of Democratic Senate Majority Leader Winnie Brinks. Now, let's recall that the legislature missed the October 1st deadline to pass the budget for this fiscal year, and so they were scrambling quickly to try to get something done. And Democratic Governor Whitmer wanted some kind of deal to fix the roads, but MAGA Republican House Speaker Matt Hall wanted to gut essential programs and funding to pay for road repairs. He didn't want to raise any kind of revenue because that's what the DeVos family and other billionaire MAGA donors wanted. However, some Democrats were feeling the pressure of providing a way to fund the roads, so some House Democrats proposed the marijuana tax. And according to House Speaker Matt Hall, he eventually chose to allow the tax to hit the floor for a vote because he thought that was something that his MAGA Republicans, or at least some of them, could stomach and support. And so without any committee hearings, the marijuana tax received plenty of Democrats and Republican support in the state house, and it passed by just 2 votes in the state Senate. It was all done in a rush, and we wonder why so many working-class Michiganders are tired of what happens in Lansing. They don't seem to ever get a voice, unlike corporate donors down there. Now, Democratic Senate Majority Majority Leader Winnie Brinks claims that she sought other ways to raise revenue, but brought the tax up for a vote in the Senate once those other avenues were blocked. Why? Because Matt Hall said if the tax failed, then he would have forced a shutdown in our state government. I mean, these guys always claim to be about the working class and small business community. But when it comes to the evils of ganja, I guess they didn't have a problem voting for the tax. Now, this new law is going through the courts with cannabis supporters arguing that the new tax violates the 2018 ballot initiative that we Michiganders passed by a wide margin, which also locked in a tax to the state constitution. So this law might be unconstitutional. But here's the thing. The marijuana tax is so unpopular, and that is why no one in Lansing, no one wants to take credit for it. But when in doubt, always remember, it's the working class that has to pay for Lansing's mistakes. Never, ever the donor class.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan, it's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. Next week, William Lawrence, who's running to become the Democratic nominee for Michigan's 7th Congressional District, will be on the show. Remember, you can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'll say this again, try to find something to give you a little joy in these times, and I really mean that. I mean, you can't be consumed with everything that's going wrong in Lansing and Washington, D.C., or else you're going to lose your mind. So please find something that always gives you some kind of joy, maybe a little escapism as well. But at the same time, understand that we can get better things if we choose the right kinds of people and continue to make our voices heard, just as we did at those No Kings rallies across the nation last weekend. And I have great hope, since we know progressive policies are popular. Until next time, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.